Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
That team sure did suck last night. They just plain sucked. I've seen teams suck before, but they were the suckiest bunch of sucks that ever sucked.
Steve Rosenbloom.
There was a keg stand I lost to an 81-year-old lady. She got off the dance floor, but it was really close.
Mark Grody.
I've been waiting to get a hold of this guy for years. Yeah, Channel 2 News is out there interviewing people. Yeah, I've been talking to my wife about getting Steve. He once connected my dots and more to my plate. I'm going to dunk his ass.
They suck, so you don't have to.
Can't you morons do anything right?
Founding members of the WB Club.
Smoke weed every day.
The three words that describe this show, and I quote.
Stink, stank, stunk.
It's Saturday Suckage on the Score.
We should be 670 WSUK.
Good morning and welcome in. Saturday Suckage coming right at you with an assist to Dave the Cat. But first, Suckage roll call. Don Cooper.
They all suck.
Grobber.
This particular thing absolutely sucks.
Mike Tomlin.
Sucking.
Jake Arrieta.
This sucks. Really, it does.
Brian Cashman.
I also know that we suck right now.
Albert Almora.
Damn, Willie, man, like, do we suck?
Chris Rock.
I suck so bad, they used to pick me after the white kids.
Pat Fitzgerald.
Sometimes you got to embrace the suck.
Eloy Jimenez.
We're bad.
Oh,
you got to embrace it.
I stepped right over. I didn't. Come on.
Come on. You guys know that I make anyway. You guys suck.
Suck.
And when I got traded the next day, oh, welcome to the suck team.
Toby.
Oh, my God, this sucks.
Mark Grody.
Goose Gossage. Boy, he is something. I don't know if he sucks or not, or if he's just entertaining. There's him, and you suck.
I do.
For botching the opening, and because didn't you pick the Bears to win last week?
I gave you reasons why.
Okay.
And we saw in the first two drives how right I was. It's a good thing I'm so smart.
Oh, yeah.
I told you the Cardinals would put the ball on the ground. They would fumble. The Bears' defense, too inept to get there when the ball was on the ground. But Kyler Murray put the ball on the ground. There were opportunities. The Bears, as is their want, as is their negginess, cannot capitalize. But I gave you those reasons. And then after that, it was just, God, the Bears suck. They just suck.
So do you have anything left to make a case for the Bears to beat the Green Bay Packers at Lambeau Field? Could there possibly? This is what I was thinking about during my rushed walk-in. Can Steve actually give us reasons that the Bears might beat the Green Bay Packers tomorrow night at Lambeau Field?
I do think that there is somebody on that Bears roster, on that Bears defense, who will be brought in and be told your only job is to step on Aaron Rodgers' pinky, his pinky toe,
yeah,
as hard as you can.
And who will that be?
It does not matter. I would have... Cassius Marsh would have been
first. Not
going
to happen. He's broken, folks.
Right, he's broken. There has to be. It's not like there are There's no expendable players on that defense.
Angelo Blackson.
Will he get close enough? Travis Gibson will get close enough. He's got a future.
Well, no, I mean, it doesn't have to happen necessarily as the, because it's pretty tough for the outside linebackers, the Bears, to approach Aaron Rodgers, because when he does, he typically ejects and either makes a very frustrating 15-yard run or finds Devontae Adams down the sideline. Seriously, that is what happens. So I'm thinking more defensive linemen who can be part of the scrum and just sort of after the play, even after a handoff. Angelo Blackson or Akeem Hicks, Bilal Nichols, just go up and just give a little.
Yeah.
Well, while the refs are looking away, because they're not always just staring at Aaron Rodgers.
I do think that the best thing that could happen is to wear the longer cleats to make sure you get all the way through the pinky toe.
Oh, man, now you're getting sick.
It's going to be cold up there. It'll be wet, rain, all the elements. You got to be prepared for it.
I don't want his toe to fall off.
Why not?
Interesting.
What do you get? What do you gain by having him keep his toe?
Good point. And really, what would he, ultimately, what would he lose by having that taken off? Because really, I mean, he would adjust.
It's not like your big toe. It's not like Bill Murray talked about Sergeant Hulka as the big toe.
Right, right. He's not the one-arm guy. He's got two arms. Yeah. He's not talking about the one-arm guy. So.
I do think that that is their one and their only hope. Because
Luke,
as I looked at things this week,
mm-hmm.
So it all roils around into one thing. By the way, the People's Choice Awards took place.
Watched it
Tuesday.
Was the diva there?
I believe she had some work to do. We've been okay. Going back and forth, and you know they didn't show it on TV, but there were chants of Fire Nagy going on.
I didn't notice that.
And in Lambeau, I expect there to be chants of Nagy stays.
Yes, yes.
I would
please.
Think there would be Nagy stays. Yeah, yes. All throughout Lambeau. But I in watching the way football evolved and devolved, and you saw what Bill Belichick did in Buffalo against Buffalo, and like one pass in the first half.
Yeah.
Would Matt Nagy ever do that?
Well,
to protect Justin Fields' ribs. And do you think Justin Fields' ribs are more in danger with the Packers tackling him or with Matt Nagy coaching him? Do you think Justin, that his future is worse with Nagy coaching or with him being a target to be tackled?
Ooh, wow. That is an interesting conundrum that you have. I'm thinking it's probably Green Bay, because whatever damage has been done, it has been done by Matt Nagy up to this point. I did write down two names on my prep sheet while Dave the Cat allowed me to. And those two names are, these are two names that Bears fans did not think would come into focus. One of them you'll know, and one of them you probably won't. Alex Bars, you'll know that.
Oh, sure. Alex Bars.
Get him in there.
Yeah.
You want that extra blocker. The other one is Ben Mason. Does that name sound familiar to you or not, Steve?
No, I always fear people with two first names.
Mm.
And Ben Mason would qualify as that. So
Mason is more of a modern-esque first name, though. There was one, I think when I was growing up, I don't remember too many Masons.
No, it was.
And same with
Perry Mason was a last name.
Well, last name, but not a first name.
No. So Mason Ben Mason.
Yeah. I see what you're doing for sure. But Ben Mason is a fullback who is on the Bears practice squad right now. Fullback.
Does Nagy know that?
I don't know if he knows that. I mean, they would still have to make a move to get him on the real roster. So he's there. He's just sitting there. So these and honestly, these
just
are the
sitting. Of course he is.
He's just
a fullback.
Sitting there.
He's just gonna sit there.
He must have said something. So he is there. And so it just you sort of can see the game plan building up to this week, and you're going to have, even if Justin Fields says he is not rusty, he's probably going to be a little bit rusty, and he's probably going to be a little bit careful, and he is in a little bit of pain. So, unfortunately, running the football is probably going to be the game plan. I say unfortunately because I know people want to see him, Justin Fields, throw the football. I don't know if we're going to see the Bill Belichick game plan. I don't know if they got the guts to do that, but it won't be far off if they have it their way.
But if you were to do that, what would be the point of putting Justin Fields in there anyways?
That's a good question. I think maybe that
is there a reason to play Justin Fields this week?
Well, I mean, the question that I kept asking this week at Hallis Hall to whomever could answer questions about Justin Fields was, is this game good for him just because of it's the Green Bay Packers? He made the bold statements on the Parkins and Spiegel show about, you know, we're gonna get this rivalry back in our favor sooner than later. It's like you're going to have to taste that atmosphere, because if Justin Fields is the long-term answer, and I still think that he is, you're going to be playing that team every single year in that atmosphere and hopefully eventually without Aaron Rodgers. I do think that there is some good in him playing there and feeling that and seeing something different and feeling the rush that he will literally get from the Green Bay Packers on Sunday night.
I think the experience of playing in Lambeau is terrific.
Yeah.
The experience of playing in Lambeau 3 weeks after an injury that takes 6 weeks to heal is short-sighted.
Do you think it by the Bears or by Justin Fields? Because
yeah,
the Bears essentially said that he was medically clear. They did say he was medically cleared and have been quietly sort of in a peripheral sense. They've been leaving it up to Justin Fields. They've been saying, hey, it's a pain tolerance thing. Can you get out there and do this? And maybe that's a mistake by the Bears, because what player worth his own football soul wouldn't say, yeah, I could tough it out?
Right. And why would you let him out there for that? I would not. I he's going to be around longer than the coach, than the general manager, than maybe the president, and got hopefully the random McCaskey. Let me put it this way. If, as Hub's report said, George McCaskey told Matt Nagy, play Fields. I don't care what you said to Andy Dalton or about Andy Dalton, play Fields. Then would it be incumbent upon George McCaskey to say, do not play him until the normal run of a cracked rib has been healed? Of course he wants to play.
Yeah.
That's one of the things we really liked about him, is his toughness. And I don't want comparative rib injuries the way Justin Fields was going through this week, right?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I totally get what you're saying. And yes, to answer your question, if it is George McCaskey that is making the decisions on play him or not play him, then yeah, it would be incumbent upon him to say no. By the way, I have a theory on what happened in that room.
Ooh.
When
be in the room where it happens, the room where it happens. I want to be in the room where it happens.
What is that?
That's Hamilton.
That's Hamilton.
You're good. I'll give it to you. I did see Hamilton with Dan Dorfman.
Ooh.
We had a date.
You say the price of my love's not a price that you're willing to pay. That's
bit
King George.
By bit, putting it together. Oh, no, that's a different one.
Want to be in the room where it happens. That was probably the most likely, the most popular meme, the most popular audio meme that came out of that.
I'm sorry. Okay, you are more hip than I. Let's just, at this point, you have overtaken me.
Well, I'm both hip and hop.
Yeah, yes, you are.
Yeah.
You are a hip hopster, and you're very Wilco.
So what is it? What is it?
All right, so here is my theory about that Hub report, where Hub reported that it was George McCaskey who made the decision to have Justin Fields be the starter.
Right.
That he stepped in, and as an owner is allowed to do. Here is my, and then, of course, Matt Nagy went out of his way, unquestioned, unprompted, to say that basically that's ridiculous, that didn't happen, it's my decision. Here's what I think. I think that because they're always talking about how the decisions are that we're all in on, we're all collaborating on the decisions. Right. We're all, all right, stop collaborating. Listen, everybody, see, I'm hip too.
Yeah,
I got your 90s
bitching,
references.
Yeah.
So where was I? So anyway, so they're collaborating and all the voices are being heard. Maybe some people are saying don't start him. Some people are saying start him. Whoever those powers might be. Maybe there's a scout in there. Maybe all the coaches, all, you know, Ted Phillips and George McCaskey, maybe other McCaskeys. And my guess is this, that George McCaskey's vote, his input was, yeah, I think you should start him. And so I think that his voice was heard by Matt Nagy. It's sort of like when our boss, Mitch Rosen, puts a suggestion in, like something to the effect of, you know, hey, Ian Happ was pretty good this week. You might don't be afraid to play it. And usually that means play it. So
the passive aggressiveness that goes on with that?
Yeah, feel free. Mitch's thing is feel free. Feel free to play that.
To me, that's all. I dare you to disagree with me.
Yes, exactly. So I think that in that room, it probably was George McCaskey's vote to have him play. And I think that Matt Nagy, being a smart employee and pupil, said, yeah, okay, I'm going to go ahead and based on the fact that I've heard all these voices, the one that I really heard is the guy that is going to decide my future, and that is George McCaskey, the freaking owner of the Chicago Bears. And so he went along with it. So I don't think he directly said, okay, George, yes, sir, I will do that. And it wasn't George going to the... That was George's vote. That's just my guess. That's my guess.
George's vote was 51%.
Yes, as it always is.
Yes.
So I'm just saying, like, I would probably do that too. And I think that most of the people listening probably like the fact that it happened. However it happened, and it's good that it happened, or else this season would be even more painful than it already is.
And the problem, or the thing with that, is the reason Matt Nagy might have gone along with it in addition is because you have to go back and retrace all the cockamamie stuff that they said. So you had the random McCaskey at the top, who's 51%, and you had terrible Ted Phillips, and then you had Hayden Ryan Pace, and then you had Matt Nagy, and you had them all collaborating. They all agreed collaboration was going to be the word, some form of that.
Yes.
And then you have to tag that, tie that to what were they told? What were Hayden Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy told by Terrible Ted and George as far as, do they have to win? Do they have to win a playoff game?
Right.
What are they? And
you're saying in conjunction with Justin Fields starting.
No. Okay. I'm going back before that. Because this is where it gets really muddy.
Yeah.
And it gets stupid, potentially. You got to go back to January when they were told they were going to be kept. When we were told they were going to be kept around because of the magic collaboration. And under those, let's say that was the criteria. That they, you got to win. You got to win a playoff game. We have to do something. Well, that explains signing Andy Dalton, getting married to Andy Dalton.
And starting him,
making
too.
Making all the promises to Andy Dalton, even though he doesn't throw more than 20 yards in the air downfield.
And he throws 4 interceptions sometimes.
So that's why they went after him and made the promises and had to start him, when clearly all hope, all reason for humanity, Bears humanity, was Justin Fields when they drafted him. And yet, what were they told exactly? We don't know. By Ted and George. Those are the two things that Hayden Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy were working with. We don't know what they were told. And you had to wait for, I think they had to wait for George to say, okay, it's all right. You know, Luke, I am your father. Play Justin Fields.
The other part is you talk about what the coaching staff may have been told before the season. Like, as you said, did they say you have to win in order to keep your jobs this year? What were they then told when they started Justin Fields? Did that calculus change? Did George McCaskey, did Ryan Pace, did Ted Phillips say, okay, we kind of got our wish. We know that you went with our vote. So if that was,
sucks.
And yeah, it. So then did they say, thank you for starting this kid. We know that there's going to be growing pains. You will now be judged differently, which is the case for all of these guys coming back.
And I have not seen an answer. I don't know what you feel might be the answer, but I think that's exactly right. That the idea of their futures being changed because George made a decision on who the starting quarterback was going to be should have a very real effect on where they go and what they do.
Yeah, and expectations, you know?
All right, we got to take a break. When we come back, I'll tell you what's coming up later in the show.
Please.
It's just romping and stomping. At 11:40, we will talk with Patrick Manley.
Oh, sweet. He's coming on, huh?
Yep.
Good.
The Patrick Manley Long Snapper Award given to the best college long snapper will be awarded tonight. We'll talk to him about that. We will talk to him about a coach replacement for the Bears, very near and dear to his heart. Today's an anniversary of a very special teams game.
Oh, I know exactly where you're going with this.
By the Bears.
But I won't ruin it.
And his father-in-law, we'll talk about his father-in-law's Hall of Fame chances. Patrick Manley is. And you know what? What's his best memory in Lambeau? It can't be that hard to figure out.
Sounds like you got all the questions, man. I'm going to sit this one out.
I love Patrick Manley. I love the man, the myth, the mullet. And I think he's just terrific to to talk to. I mean, you're on the man, the myth, the
no,
mullet.
No, 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 the man, the myth, the manly.
The manly, yeah. The mullet. Yeah, yeah. Mick.
No, yeah, of course. I go on with him and Olin Kreutz and Mully. It's a battle. Like, you know, Olin coming at me and, you know, no, it's fun. It's a really fun pregame show, and they are always just the best. So I'm actually, the reason I said, oh, you got him. I mean, sometimes Manly can be hard to get on if it's not his paid appearance. So, know, I'm thrilled that he's coming on. That's awesome.
But I would love to talk about his award, and what's really special about it is that it shines a light on a very important part of the game. You notice the guy when he messes up.
Once for Manly, by the way.
Right, but that's when you notice the guy.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that this award benefits a very special, at Bernie's books, it's a very special, a very special endeavor.
Good.
And so we'll do that. We also have goats in the news. We'll be discussing that.
Goats or greatest of all time goats?
Both.
Oh,
and we will be discussing ex-bear criminals in the news, because that's a segment.
Sam Hurd, is he around here? Has he got a bag out in the hallway?
Surprisingly, the ex-president of the Wake and Bake Club is not part of it. But God, it's
50 pounds of cocaine, 130,000 pounds of marijuana. That's all.
Yeah. And we will do What Mark Hurd, our near award-winning segment. We will do that at the top of the hour. So that's it. If you want to text us, 312-644-6767. It's also the number to make a phone call to The Score that nobody ever makes, 312-644-6767. And I don't know do you have Allen Robinson as part of What Mark Hurd? I've not heard if you have What Mark Hurd,
Allen Robinson. I do, but there's a twist to it.
Okay, then
I'll explain it to you during the break.
I don't want to. I want to hear it live. We'll save that for then. Okay. So you know what? Let's come back with both goats in the news.
Yes. Okay.
And ex-bear criminals in the news.
I am here for all of it.
You will be.
I'm glad I showed up.
Everyone.
Yes.
And we have the video to prove that you did.
Yes.
He's Mark Roney. I'm Steve Rosenblum. Saturday 2nd, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
All right, stop collaborating. Listen, everybody, see, I'm hip too.
That's the hip Mark Grody. I'm the hop Steve Rosenblum. We are hip hop sports talk radio Saturday Sunday.
I don't know why, but on Thursday, as I was walking out of Hallis Hall, and the music is random while they practice.
Yep.
Like it goes all, you know, decades and times and genres. And for some reason, Vanilla Ice, Ice Ice Baby, was a thumping as I walked to my car. I don't know why. It just was. It may be just random mix and it came on.
Did somebody lose a bet?
Maybe the coaches were controlling the music that day. You know, they probably dig a little 90s hip hop, little 90s fake hip hop. Yeah. Sure.
By the way, when we were discussing stepping on Aaron Rodgers' pinky toe and how you figure out who that's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
773 texter.
Oh, that's right.
Text had the right idea. They told Christian Jones to do it, but he will step on his own toe and defer again.
Yeah, and smile because his
nicely done. Yeah, nicely played.
He's too way too. Actually, Christian Jones would be the perfect person to do it because, again, his resting face is a smile, so nobody could really go after him for intent and premeditation. It's like, come on. It's a joke.
Yeah,
it's a joke.
Yeah, we'd be. The Tech Zone is brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time. Shop online at rosenhyundai.com. Okay, goats in the news. Let's talk about that.
Uh-huh.
The Bulls play tonight. You will hear that 6:45 Chuck's pregame show. Bulls and the evil, dreaded Heat. This could be a bad one for them. But meanwhile, a former Bull was in the news.
Why would it be a bad? Just because of the injuries and stuff?
Oh, they're so shorthanded. Okay, they're so small. They're so short. I just
go on.
I hate to see the way this story devolves between COVID and injuries, and it. It's going to be Jimmy Butler, and maybe that makes it worse. And this is the team. This would be a team. This and the Knicks would be a team most likely to face in the playoffs if they do as well as
you think. They beat Denver without DeRozan. Yes, yes.
And I think that was it. I think that was their that was Everest, and then
Okay, go on.
Lonzo Ball's dad. You know Lonzo Ball. He plays for the Bulls. Lonzo Ball. Yeah. Well, LaMelo plays for the Charlotte Hornets.
He does.
You know who owns the Charlotte Hornets?
I do. A fellow by the name of Michael Jordan.
So somebody asked Somebody asked. LeVar Ball, the dad, the who?
Big baller brand.
Yeah. So how often does LaMelo talk to Michael Jordan, get tips from him, you know, get advice?
I don't know.
And the quote was,
my nose is big.
How often does he seek out advice from Michael Jordan? Never. This is LeVar Ball. What advice is he going to give him? You tell me what advice he going to give him. This is the exact quotes. Did you ever have milk in your refrigerator, man? When the damn thing expires, I hope you throw it away. When was the last time he, Jordan, won a championship?
Wow.
The game has changed. What's he going to tell him?
Wow.
I don't know. You know, it's just on its face so incredibly stupid.
Yeah, you just don't need to say that.
No.
Maybe there is, I understand what he is saying, that Jordan played from within the three-point line, and it was different basketball.
It's just crazy.
Yeah, that's just unnecessary.
Okay, so as long as you're talking goats, it came up, both Jordan and goats and the meaning of it, and a goat didn't know she was a goat. This happened with... Stop, Caesar. That sucks. I'm going to walk it up.
Caesar's had a long day already. Leave him alone.
Yeah.
Deuce Gossage was on the air.
Yeah. So, Jonah Hill, a wonderful actor.
Yeah.
Was on the Jimmy Fallon show. He was talking about the movie Don't Look Up. And in that movie, Leonardo DiCaprio, Jennifer Lawrence, and Meryl Streep, widely regarded as the greatest actress of all time. Okay. Certainly she's in the team picture.
Sure.
Not just in the team picture. She's in the front row sitting in the middle seat.
Undeniable.
So Jonah Hill is telling this story about the press junket that they have been on with Meryl Streep and Jennifer Lawrence and Leonardo DiCaprio for this movie. And here's the way he explains it.
It's so cool, and she's so cool, and everyone goes on talk shows, and they're like, this person's cool, that person's cool. Meryl Streep's actually cool, and she's the best actor. In fact, I've been called, so we've been doing press for this movie, and in the interviews the past couple days, I keep saying, oh, and you know, getting to work with Meryl, she's the GOAT, right? Which, if you know, stands for greatest of all time, right? That's like an acronym that you use for like Michael Jordan or Jay-Z or whoever, or you know, whoever your GOAT is for whatever you're into.
Yeah.
And Meryl, to me, is the GOAT. She's the greatest of all time. So the whole week I'm saying, you know, working with Meryl's the best. She's the GOAT. She's the GOAT. And then today we're doing a press conference and she's like, you know, and Jonah is so comfortable with me. He's been calling me a GOAT all week. And she's like, and I'm like, what the f-? And I'm like, and Jennifer Lawrence explained to her, because she was telling Jennifer about this, how she, and she's so cool, she wasn't even offended by it. She was just like, I guess he like loves me and is calling me a goat. And Jennifer's like, no, Meryl stands for greatest of all time. So she was like, hey, thanks for calling me the goat. I thought you were calling me a goat this whole time. I was like, Meryl, you're like,
and she's still cool,
the greatest of all time.
She really is. Meryl
shout
Street.
Out to the GOAT, Meryl Streep.
Yeah, the greatest of all time.
That is just, and you can see Meryl Streep not knowing what GOAT is.
Oh, totally. It's like when I said BFF in the Cubs radio booth in my rookie year, and Pat Hughes looked back at me. He thought I was dropping F-bombs on the air.
Really?
I swear to God. I never told you. I feel like I've told that story too many times
now.
Well,
recount.
No. Okay, I will. Yeah, no, it was, I'll make it really concise here. So Eddie Vedder had been in the booth that day, and he was He was talking on the radio with Pat and Ron, like he does on seventh inning stretch days. And it was one of the first times that I'd come across Eddie in that iteration of me covering the Chicago Cubs. And after Eddie left, Pat Hughes, knowing that I'm a huge fan of Eddie Vedder, just kind of looked back at me on the air and said, "Mark, what did you think about that performance from Eddie Vedder? Did you enjoy?" Talking to him,
Mark.
and because I got a chance to talk to Eddie a little bit, like off air and stuff, and I was dorking out with him, and then I said to Pat, I go, yeah, I said, we, you know, I feel like, you know, Eddie and I are really close now. I feel like it's like we're BFFs, and this is on air. Pat's looking at me, you know, because I'm behind him in the booth. Then he turns around, doesn't say a word, continues to call the game. Here's the next bet. Ian Happ to the play. There's a ground ball. And I'm just like, whoa, what happened here? And Misk is kind of looking, and Ron's like, I don't know what's going on. And so then to the commercial break, Pat takes off his headphones like he does, slowly turns to me and looks at me and goes, BFF?
You can imagine and that. Miska, wearing that sweater.
Oh, Miska and Coomer are just dying. Oh, like, they're not helping me at all. They're turning, and I'm like, I go, no, Pat, that means best friends forever. And he's like, oh, I don't know. And I go, ask your daughters. I swear to God.
Ask your daughter.
Yeah, like, I was like, ask. And again, Coomer and Miska just dying and not having my back. And it was just hilarious. And he did figure it out eventually, and then it was funny. But at first, he thought I was dropping F-bombs on the radio.
It's so simple, even a 12-year-old could figure it out. Somebody go get me a 12-year-old. Somebody go get Pat a 12-year-old. All right, we'll take a break. So, we'll get back to, I still want to do Bears, ex-Bear criminals in the news. We will do that. But we are going to bring in an ex-Bear himself, Patrick Manley. Bears. We'll talk to him. The award will be given out. And there's all kinds of stuff around Patrick Manley that makes us love the man, the myth, the mullet. We're going to bring him on. He's Mark Rohde. I'm Steve Rosenblum. We're BFFs.
Yes.
Pat knows what it means.
He knows now.
Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
What? Did we just become best friends?
Yep. Welcome in. Welcome back. Steve Rosenblum, Mark Rohde, Saturday Suckage.
Bears.
We're going to go to the Scores Hotlines presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. And we are going to bring in the man, the myth, the mullet. The Patrick Manley Award is going to be given out tonight. And we have the aforementioned Patrick Manley. He's here. He's with us. We're thrilled. Patrick, how are you?
I'm great. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great. Thanks for joining us. I think it's terrific that you have this is the third year, right, that you've managed to shine a light on the guys who only get noticed when they screw up?
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
So who are the nominees tonight? How are they determined? And explain everything going on.
Yeah, well, I'll just start with like how this thing got started. It's called the Patrick Manley Award, but two guys in the long snapping community, and yes, there is a long snapping community. Kevin Gold, who's an agent, who's actually Pat Scales' agent, is big time in the long snapping community. And then Chris Rubio, who is an instructor who might be the best long snapping coach in the country, came to me and they said, listen, it's time for an award for the long snappers in college. You know, there's punter awards, there's kicker awards, there's center awards, there's linebacker awards. And I was like, heck yes, let's do this. What are we going to do? And they said, well, first off, we want to name it the Manley Award. And I was like, whoa, okay, that's an honor. Thank you very much. But more importantly, let's get this thing rolling. So that was 4 years ago. And 3 years ago, we got together and kind of put together a nominating committee and a group of people, of experts, long snapping experts, to come up with nominees, then down to 10 finalists, and then down to 3 finalists. And this year, our 3 guys are Alex Ward from the University of Central Florida, Damon Johnson from USC, and then Cal Adamidis from Pitt. And it's been fun to watch these guys snap over their career, especially this year, watching all their tape. And then we get down to these 3 guys, and we give all their tape to our, I think we have 15 long snapping experts to kind of vote on these guys, and that's how we come up with the winner.
And I encourage people to go to the Patrick Manley Award website because you will see some familiar names as far as that committee to evaluate them. There's Robbie Gold.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
There's Brad Maynard. The best backward counter. You had some description of Brad Maynard. He knew the clock math better than anybody you've ever heard.
Oh, he's unbelievable. Yeah, he needed to be standing right next to Lovie Smith or whoever the head coach was in the last 2 minutes of a game to let you know if you needed a kneel, take the timeout, not take the timeout. Yeah, he's like a savant like that.
When the nominees find out that they are up for this award, mm-hmm. are they like, wow, I didn't know this thing existed. I'm getting an what? Are you kidding me?
So it's funny you say that because they came in town Thursday night, and yesterday this award, we benefit Bernie's Book Bank. We raise money for Bernie's Book Bank. And yesterday we did a book distribution down at the Hope Institute in an elementary school here in Chicago. And I was asking the guys when we were doing all this, I'm like, so what do you guys think of this now that it's in its third year? And they said, we love it. You know, we heard about it 3 years ago. And, you know, Steve, you mentioned long snappers only get noticed when they make a mistake. And they were saying that they're excited now to actually get recognized for what they do and being good at their job. So now it's actually taken off a little bit, that it's pretty competitive amongst the snappers in college. And, you know, you get some hate tweets or bad tweets at you, like, oh, you picked the wrong guy. I'm better than this guy, or my son's better than this guy. Wow. So it's becoming, you know, it's a thing, and it's great for these guys to get recognized, and it's a true position. I mean, I'm almost positive. I think it's like 97% of Division I schools give a long snapper a scholarship. So it's a true position now, and I'm just happy they're getting recognized, and it is cool that they're excited to get here. They're excited to get on a plane and tell their teammates, hey, I'm going to Chicago to potentially win this award. So it's becoming a real live award, and our goal is to be involved with the Home Depot Awards and be on stage with all the other major awards, but we're working with them, and hopefully we'll be there soon, and the kids will be able to be up there with, you know, the top lineman, the top kicker, the top quarterback, and all that kind of stuff. So
it's a cosmic,
we're working on it.
It's a cosmic rule. Make a list, start an argument.
Mm-hmm.
It's a cosmic rule, Patrick. We're talking,
yes.
We're talking with Patrick Manley. And Patrick Manley, by the way, is part of the Scores pregame show.
He is.
With Olin Krutz and Mike Mulligan and Mark Roden.
I make an appearance.
Oh, yes, he does.
I make
That's
an
the
appearance.
Best segment. That's the best segment of pregame. It's just you and Olin having a nice conversation.
Yeah, Olin just tried to debunk everything I say. What are you talking about, Grody? Come on, Grody. Get it right, Grody.
Oh.
By the way, Bernie's Book Bank is a wonderful endeavor. I discovered that about 5 years ago while purchasing books during the holiday season at Barnes & Noble, and they said, would you like to, and I said, what is this? And through Bernie's Book Bank, you could purchase a book for a student who would be underserved in that area. I had like tears in my eyes because I grew up with, you could pick the age that you wanted to do it, and I grew up reading Dr. Seuss, and I love Dr. Seuss, and I thought it was a wonderful way to teach reading, and I got all choked up that I could buy a book, I could pay for a book to be delivered to a child who wouldn't ordinarily get that.
Right.
Bernie's Book Bank is a spectacular endeavor for the future of this country, as far as I'm concerned.
It is. Let me tell you a quick story, because yesterday I said we did a book distribution with two of the finalists. The third one gets in this morning, but it is awesome to see these kids' face light up, because a lot of these kids don't have books at home. And when they get these books, they just, you know, they start trading with each other. They're flipping through the pages. Mm-hmm. They can't wait to read them. And a neat story is the CEO of Bernie's Book Bank was talking to one of the kids when they got their book, and they said, you know, I asked Santa for Christmas for a book about trolls, and this is a random thing. And the person opens up their bag of books, and guess what's in there? A book about trolls. And he was like, uh-oh, cue the, he started crying, like, you know, tearing up. But to see these kids light up when they get these books, it's outstanding. And a lot of these kids can't wait to take them home to read them to their brother or sister and share them with them. And it really is a great thing, and I think it's awesome for these kids to be able to, you know, just further their education and further their, you know, love of learning and love of reading. So it's really cool to see these kids light up when you give them their books.
So December 11th, 2006, special teams, something special happened on special teams for your Bears.
Why am I drawing a blank?
I kind of am too, actually. I'm looking forward to the answer here.
The opponent is the Rams.
Oh, this is Devin Hester's two kickoff returns?
Yes. Of course it is.
Yes.
Yes, it is. Hello, what is it? So, yeah, I can never get enough of the people on the sidelines what they think, what they go through, what happens with a guy who should be in the Hall of Fame because he's the best that ever was. So, Patrick Manley, share with us that whatever the flashes in your mind, the snapshot of that game, of one of the two or the whole feeling.
Well, just the whole thing, just seeing him when he goes back there, the whole sideline stops, whether it's a punt return or kickoff return. And what was really funny is watching on third down when the defense would come off the field, and Bob Babich, the linebacker coach at the time, is yelling at Urlacher and Briggs to come sit down because they want to go through adjustments. But what do? They turn around and watch the punt. Babich is like, Briggs, get over here, sit down. No, coach, give us a, you know, they'll put their hand up like, no, we're going to watch Devin go to work. So that's part of it. And then when you see him in action, it's a thing of beauty, and it's, you know, your jaw drops and all that kind of stuff. But the thing about that Rams game, okay, he returns one kickoff return, and I think we were up 15 or 16 or something late, and we have our hands team out there. So it's a bunch of linebackers, tight ends. It's not the true kickoff return team, but Devin's deep, and they kick it off deep. and basically nobody blocks anybody, and he still returns it for a touchdown. And then, you know, obviously that blows the game, and we win. I think it's like 6-7 minutes to go in the game. But just to be able to watch him do his thing was amazing. And more importantly, what was fun was to go into meetings on Monday and watch it like through the all 22 and just see how great he was of making guys miss and the reads he was able to make. And it was nice to have a front row seat for that.
And they always had Lovie Smith, too, like on those big returns, running down the sideline, windmilling his arm.
Oh, yeah.
Like nobody's more excited. What's that?
And a big old grin he had, yeah, yes. And he'd be clapping, that clap he had. It was like almost an awkward-looking clap.
Yeah.
Just, yeah.
That's coaching, mister.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
All right, so I don't want to – you and Olin and Molly and Mark can break down the Bears-Packers mess tomorrow on the pregame show. What's your best Lambeau memory?
Oh, man. I got a couple of them. I think the Brian Robinson blocked field goal was pretty cool after the Walter Payton ceremony at Soldier
Field heavens.
Going up there.
Yeah.
And then the other one is my daughter was born on Christmas Eve, 2005. We played the Packers on Christmas Day on 2005. My daughter was born that night before the game, so I was here in Chicago, spent the night in the hospital, got up in the morning, drove to Lambeau with the team doctors.
Oh, my God.
Got there about 2 hours before kickoff with zero sleep. Cool thing was I put the, I was going to call them paw prints, my daughter's footprints on my forearm. You know how they put the ink in there and they do all that stuff? So I'm out there just dead tired, no sleep, playing a game after my daughter was born, and we won the NFC North that game, I believe. Yeah, we did. We won the NFC North that game. So that was a really cool moment of, you know, life changing with your daughter being born and then going out and playing a game with no sleep and all that. But those are my probably two greatest memories.
You know, I'm thinking about that too. I mean, that is amazing. But as part of you thinking, ain't no way I'm going to let somebody else be long snapping.
Yep.
Like, because they could have, right? They could have brought somebody in, right? That has to go through your head, right?
Well, so we're sitting there like opening gifts. I think my in-laws were in town. And my wife, you know, the day before the game, she's supposed to give birth, you know, the next week or whatever. And she's like, can you come upstairs real quick? I'm like, what's up? She's like, I think I'm going into labor. And I was like, I have a game
tomorrow. Not now,
honey. I have a game tomorrow. I'm thinking that but not telling her that I have a game tomorrow. And I'm like, well, you better hurry this thing up before kickoff.
That's awesome.
So I have to call the team trainer. I call the team trainer. I'm like, Tim, Tamara's going into labor. I'm going to the hospital. I'll call you in a little bit. We'll figure out how I get up to Lambeau. So that's kind of how it happened.
Speaking of your in-laws, I wanted to bring this up because I'm quite passionate about your father-in-law. Tamara's dad is Tommy John. For those of you who are late to the program here, that is Patrick Manley's father-in-law. He won 288 games in the major leagues, pitching for the White Sox, the Yankees, and the Dodgers. And pitching in the World Series and was spectacular in whatever NLCS he was in.
Mm-hmm.
And
he's not just an injury. He's more than an injury.
And he's not a doctor. The young kids think he's a doctor.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I have to ask, because Jim Cott finally getting in.
Yes.
Does that raise the spirits in the John family household about getting in, getting this confounding left-hander into the Hall of Fame? And I found a great argument. There are many arguments for it, and longevity and 288 wins, and he was spectacularly pitching. If you want postseason, he's got rings he can show you, and he's got everything. But if you look on baseballreference.com and you look at the similarity scores, now with Jim Cott, who is his most similar baseball career shape and type, every player in the top 10 compared to Tommy John is in the Hall of Fame, which tells you Tommy John's a Hall of Famer, tells me anyways. So what did the election of Jim Cott or the results of that mean to the John family household?
I haven't talked about that person in particular, but we talk about it quite a bit. Obviously, his sons do as well. And, you know, we argue he should be in. But my thing is what he's done for the game as well. It's not just the wins, the longevity, but what he's done for the game with the surgery, winning more games after the surgery than he did before, which was right in the middle of his career, how he's helped all these other baseball players continue to have a career, how he has more wins than anybody else with the Tommy John surgery. I think all that just wrapped into one, and then with the other guys getting in, he needs to be in. And the other argument I always have is when people ask me about him, like, oh, he's in the Hall of Fame, right? So that what does that tell you? Then he's a Hall of Famer.
Yes.
So I mean, every person is, oh, he's in the Hall of Fame, right? Well, he should. No, he's not, but he should be. And then you tell him 288 wins, and you tell him, you know, 26 years pitching at 46 years old, opening day starter when he was 46 years old for the Yankees, and all that crazy stuff that he did with his career. He's a Hall of Famer, and I hope it gets recognized soon, because he's getting up there in age and he needs to be alive while he goes into the Hall of Fame.
I was lucky enough to cover him when he pitched for the Angels, and he tied Jim Thome as the nicest man in baseball history.
Yes.
He did. It's just unbelievable. Before we let you go, I can't let you come on this show and not ask you about Dave Tobe's coaching candidacy. If there were a Bears opening, if that were to happen, and you see, I've always seen Jim Harbaugh, you can go back to Mike Ditka, and there's been a louder and louder argument for special teams coaches, and Chris Tabor was the interim coach when Matt Nagy wasn't there. Dave Tobe, I have no idea if he's interested, and maybe the whole Kansas City thing, but I've always thought he was a perfect guy to take over a head coach. Do you know where he stands on that, and what do you think about his candidacy if the Bears were to have an opening?
I think he would jump at it, every day, and I think he would be fantastic. Just, you know, being in the meetings with him, and what I love about special teams coaches, and everybody talks about it, is they work with the entire team. And when he runs a special teams meeting, the respect the guys give him and how good he is as a communicator, and he's demanding, but he's fair. And I love that about a coach or any coach. And I think he would be fantastic. And, you know, I also got a chance to go sit in while he's in Kansas City in his special teams meeting and watch him work. And it's the same way he was in Chicago. That respect is there. He's just a tremendous coach. And I think he would be fantastic. But the one question I would ask him, I'd be like, Dave, who is your offensive coordinator? Who is working with Justin Fields? But I think he would be a fantastic head coach, but that would be the number one question I would ask him. Who are you bringing in to work with Justin Fields in this offense?
Well, I hope we get the chance to ask him.
Yes.
Patrick, thank you very much. And Patrick Manley Award will be presented tonight, correct?
It will. And real quick, you can actually watch it. So we're going to live stream it as well on the Bernie's Book Bank Facebook page, the Patrick Manley Award Facebook page, and then I think Bernie's Book Bank YouTube channel. So there'll be those three avenues you can watch it.
And is the mullet well done for tonight? Well,
no, I've sculpted it down a little bit. As you get older, the mullet's just not as cool.
No, yes, it always.
It is cool. But, I know. But and then you start losing hair up top. It gets a little thin. It just doesn't look as
good. So, in other words, your wife told you to cut your hair.
Pretty much.
Yeah. that's the way it works, man. All hey, man, I'm looking forward to talking to you and Olin and Mully tomorrow morning, brother. Talk to you later.
All right, guys. We'll see you. Have a great day. Yep.
Patrick. Bye-bye. Patrick Manley, Scores pregame show tomorrow afternoon, isn't it?
Yeah. Tomorrow is Sunday, so I believe.
Sunday night game.
So we've got like a 4 o'clock pregame thing. And I got all sorts of times to keep track of. So
we love ourselves some Patrick Manley. There's so good. So much to talk to him about, and he's so terrific. And the idea of Bernie's Book Bank is a wonderful thing that benefits from the Patrick Manley Long Snapper Award. Plus, Dave Tobe. Sure. Who's your offensive coordinator?
That's the question.
Yes,
always is.
All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, our near award-winning segment, What Mark Heard.
Yes, all Bears. All Bears.
No,
I can't say it's all Bears. Almost all Bears. There's a twist.
Well, there's a twist. We'll wait for that twist. Bears. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Fee and fees apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.